there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Bike Radar Podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus, and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you.
Hello, and welcome to the Bike Radar Podcast. I'm Ashley Quinlan, Senior Road Tech Editor here at BikeRadar.com, and I'm joined today by Simon Von Bromley and Liam Carhill. Simon, how are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Kind of just getting over a slight cold. I moaned about this in last week's podcast, and it's still kind of lingering on a little bit, so I will spare the listeners the details, but not bad, thanks.
Good. What have you been up to recently, apart from recovering from
Well, that's kind of put. We're supposed to be doing lots of Bike of the Year testing, as we keep mentioning on this podcast. And I'm hopefully getting back into that this week. But yeah, I've been testing a kind of, I always say mid-range for this sort of thing. But actually, it's a Force Axis equipped Giant Propel Advanced Pro Zero Axis, and it was It's about £6,400, which is that mid-range? Do we think that's mid-range
these days
with the prices?
Yeah,
sad.
Annoyingly, that is mid-range.
But that was a very fun bike to ride. Yeah, really good. Yeah. So I've been looking forward to having that review published.
Yeah, well, we'll look forward to it when it comes out. And Liam, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. I've been doing the grand sum of zero riding. I'm actually in like a big strength block in the gym. And so my body just does not work at all for daily life or riding.
I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure on social media you like to publish that you go on the Bristol Bath Pike Path.
I do. To work. And then, you know what? I ride home again.
Wow.
Funny that.
Yeah. But you are getting some mileage in at least.
A little bit. But mostly listening to Second World War podcasts.
In the gym whilst you pump iron.
Yes. Yeah. I listen to the pre-Iron Curtain. There you go.
Very good, very good. Right, okay, look, we're here today to talk about aero testing, and more specifically, an aero test that we performed recently at the Silverstone Sports Engineering Hub Wind Tunnel. Simon, you've been leading on this test, and I know, Liam, you're joining us today because you had to step in, unfortunately, because Sam wasn't very well during that weekend.
So, and not unfortunately. Well, I had a great time.
But we've got this test that we've been running, and so we wanted to get in and have a quick discussion about it. Maybe cover a few pointers around how we did some testing, and then end with some of the key results, if we may. And obviously, we'll point you to all the relevant places that you can see the content that we've created around it. But Simon, designer of said test, what was the goal? Heading to the wind tunnel to do it.
So I think one of the things that is usually associated with, aero bikes, aero kit and all this sort of stuff is that it's this kind of, you have to spend a lot of money, and that maybe this stuff kind of is helpful. But, if someone wants to go out and buy a new aero bike, we kind of said in the intro, you're probably going to have to spend thousands of pounds. Yeah. So what I was quite keen to do was to look at what are the kind of best value aero upgrades and, how significant gains, what are the kind of significant gains you can get, without spending much money. And I think we tested a kind of range of different products, and then, which I think is very helpful, we've ordered them in a kind of, best to worst value. We've given them a kind of pounds to what's saved figure. Yeah. So you can decide what is definitively the best bang for buck aero upgrade.
And if the listeners think that we saved nothing, we actually saved over 70 watts from baseline. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. So, Liam, what was the baseline?
The baseline was me in my standard vented helmet. This is what I'd go out at the weekend riding, in the summer. Vented
you're
helmet.
A real cyclist.
I'm a real cyclist. I'm a traditionalist. I'm a normal person. I ain't slippery. So it was vented helmet, jersey, shorts, and, well-fitted jersey as well. It's a Bike Radar jersey. It's the best jersey. normal socks, because,
Yeah, you're a normal person.
I'm a normal person. And yeah, I was riding in a relatively comfortable position on the tops.
Okay.
At about 215 watts, I think it was.
Yeah, sure. And that's for a wind speed of 35 kilometers per hour.
Ah, okay. And what wheels were you running on this Athos, so people understand?
Athos.
They were
kind of entry-level wheels, so they were Mavic Askiums, a wheel set that I think every cyclist has probably had in their lifetime.
Sorry, I'm going to be a pedant now. I think you'll find they're called Axiom.
Yeah, and I thought... That's what I thought. But it turned... What? Ash corrected me in my tech check and I had to go look it up. I was like, what?
No.
Yeah.
That is the last 13 years of my life, pretty much.
Exactly the same. I was like, Mavic Askiom. And then Ash corrected it in my draft. I couldn't believe it.
To anyone, if you're buying any Mavic Axioms, if you look at the rim, it says Axiom on it rather than Askiom.
Yeah, this is why he's senior tech.
This is why I didn't get the job. I haven't had that promotion.
So what's it like being in the wind tunnel?
Windy. You know what? Actually, you say it's windy. It is the most consistent headwind you've ever felt. It's really, really weird the way that the air gets pulled over you instead of almost getting shoved in your face like you would find out on the road.
You get a feeling of suction behind you.
You know what? You can actually feel pockets of wake. Like, I am not the most aero person and my head sticks up. I've had plenty of teammates when I was racing tell me this. Get your head down. No.
Or to see where I'm going.
Yeah, exactly. I could feel a little kind of pocket of air behind my head on the small of my neck. It was amazing.
And is it chilly? Warm?
You know what? Apparently, it used to be really, really cold, but it's actually quite warm these days. Like, it was not a warm day outside, and it was still like 18, 19 in the wind tunnel. It was fine.
I suppose temperature can affect airflow and response to things.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm afraid that their wind tunnel, this is kind of a little bit beyond my thing. I imagine they have a control for it. Yeah, obviously, they have very fancy machines, don't they? And some very intelligent people who sit at those machines and crunch all the numbers, and I'm sure there's a kind of obviously temperature would affect the kind of the rolling resistance of the kind of rolling road that you're running on, and so obviously if there are strain gauges in that rolling road in order to measure the drag force, presumably there's an algorithm that kind of compensates for temperature to a degree, but yeah, I don't really know.
That's fine. Well, maybe it's a subject for a future podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So, how did we carry out this test then? What were the control? We talk about sort of control parameters, but what were the things that you really had under control? What did we keep the same?
So I think as with kind of any type of controlled testing, you kind of want to be changing, basically one thing at a time so that it's that change that was the kind of the difference that you recorded. If you do record a difference, for example. So, yeah, as kind of mentioned, and as with most standard wind tunnel tests, Liam's bike was attached to a kind of rolling road. It was bolted in place. Liam sat on the bike, he pedaled, and I think Silverstone Wind Tunnel has a kind of like projection based system so that the rider can make sure that they're sat in the same position.
Yeah, you've got if you're changing your position, then obviously your position changes, and that is illustrated on the floor in front of you. But if you are trying to keep the same position, you've got an outline of where your shoulders, arms, head was. So it's actually quite easy for even a rider like me that is all over the bike to keep a very, very balanced position. And one thing I want to say, you always think, I always thought when you go into a wind tunnel, you've got to be relatively fit and do 200, 300 watts or something like that. They literally had me rolling along in whatever gear I wanted to be in. It started, and then you just kept it the same.
It's interesting that, isn't it? Because obviously you'll want to keep it the same, so you've got like a benchmark. But sometimes in reality, it could be that you're working harder, therefore you can't hold that position quite as tightly. So there is that sort of shortfall, real world shortfall to testing in that way, I guess.
When we come to talking about the real aero position, this is something that we need to talk about, because putting only 100 watts through the pedals is not a situation that you're going to find in a race when you're going to be wanting to use a dedicated aero position. So for me, I'm a rider that is quite far forward on the saddle. I'm quite low at the front. And I need to, if I'm adopting an aero position, I need to be putting out 300, 400 watts and trying to cling to a wheel so that I can hold that position. Otherwise, it's a nightmare, as we found out.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because you know, when you talk about, you know, wind tunnel tech, there's always the wind tunnel and CFD testing that we hear about in a lot of product launches, whether it's a bike or wheels or clothing, whatever it is. And then, you know, you've got the real world where, you know, a wind tunnel arguably can't replicate exactly what's going on in that real world and the environment and so on. So, I mean, is it fair to say that's a limitation to the testing, open to the floor?
I mean, yeah, it is to a degree, in the sense that the real world, you know, the airflow is just much messier.
Sure.
When we're out in the real world. And so, like, things aren't going to be exactly the same. But then at the same time, you know, if we were to somehow, you know, mess up the airflow in the wind tunnel, you know, that's going to mess with the results, and you're just not sure what, you know, if you see then a gain or a loss, you know, is that gain or a loss due to the fact that you've messed up the airflow or something, you know? So it's kind of like the kind of the cleanliness and the repeatability of the wind tunnel. Yeah, in a sense, you might say that it's not ideal because it doesn't, you know, obviously we don't ride bikes in the wind tunnel, as you say, and like, yeah, you know, yeah, we can switch. What narrower bars were one of the things that we tested, and in the wind tunnel, when you're bolted in place, you don't have to consider, oh, how easy would it be to handle this? And like, you know, likewise with a super aggressive time trial position, yeah, maybe you know, putting your head down in the wind tunnel and looking at your, you know, looking at your stem is really aero in the wind tunnel, but not very helpful if you need to be able to see where you're sure. going outside, right? So there is a case of, you know, translating, yeah, see it, whether it's CFD or wind tunnel results to the outside world. And of course, you know, if you go into the wind tunnel and so you go, this is the position you need to hold, like, you know, are you going to hold it in exactly the same way when you're riding in the real world? That is open to discussion. Some people will be able to do that with practice. You know, other people might find it more tricky if the position is really difficult to hold. Of course, there are some things that, you know, will translate better, for example, and some things that will translate worse. But I think in kind of favor of getting, you know, high resolution and a high degree of repeatability, I think it kind of makes sense to have, you know, that kind of, you know, that super controlled environment, even if it doesn't perfectly replicate the real world.
Yeah, well, it shows you a snapshot, doesn't it, in a particular scenario, in a particular given time. We know we're getting to the long grass about this, and let's not. But, you know, you can sort of change different parameters in the wind tunnel and purposefully do that in order to test how a product might react to that. Or, you know, if it's cleaner, for example, over a wider range, wider yaw angles, for example, then, or even changeable conditions, if you've got a very advanced wind tunnel. I'm not even sure those exist. Right?
Well,
but it could be that, you know, you could be more efficient across a spectrum of changeable conditions in a given test setup,
yeah,
than you are, you know, straight on or at 5 degrees or whatever it is.
Yeah, totally. And so, you know, just kind of going back to what we tested at, we did, you know, we changed the wind tunnel speed to 35 kilometers per hour, which yeah. is slightly slower than, you know, most brands and most people would test at.
Now, that's more realistic, isn't it?
Well, it's more realistic for, you know, riders like, you know, perhaps us sitting around this table. Of course, if you're a pro cyclist riding in the Tour de France, and that's way too slow, yeah. right? And you know, even for when I'm time trialing, for example, you know, I hope I can, you know, still hit 40 kilometers per hour plus, hopefully, on a time trial bike. So it really is kind of like, depending on what you're doing. But it also, you know, the disadvantage of testing at the slower speed is because of the kind of non-linear relationship between the power required to overcome aerodynamic drag and, you know, speed, you're kind of like the wattage figures become a little bit smaller. You know, in a sense, that's as you say, it's realistic, but it also means the kind of like resolution of your data also becomes a little bit, you know, you get less resolution if you test at a higher speed. And this is partly why brands like to do it, is that you get a little bit, you know, a 1% gain might only get, you know, at kind of 35 kilometers per hour might give you a very, very small watt saving. And then you're like, well, is that just a kind of within the margin for error? Whereas if you test at a higher speed, you kind of get the differences from that, you know, same percentage decrease in aerodynamic drag are more obvious. You just get a higher resolution picture and you can say, yes, that is definitely a gain and not just kind of noise in the data. So, and in terms of yaw, for example, yes, like it is important to, so yaw is essentially the angle of attack on the wind. So it's the angle at which the kind of wind is hitting you. So now a 0 degree yaw angle is, as many people will probably know, is a headwind. And then you go around to, you know, 5, 10 degrees, and essentially you're simulating crosswinds. Mm-hmm. Now, overall, the figures that we've given in our article and on our excellent video, and the figures that we'll give you today on this wonderful podcast, are going to be kind of, you know, your average drag. So it's a kind of, it's an average figure of the kind of power required to overcome that, that, you know, that gain is over the kind of like the course of that yaw. Now for slower riders tend to see a larger swathe of yaw angles, basically. Yeah. As you get faster and faster, you tend to see typically shallower yaw angles, which is why, you know, most things designed for the track are designed to work at really shallow yaw angles, because the faster you go, essentially everything's a, everything becomes a headwind.
Yeah, you're rolling through, if you imagine you're rolling through a static air, you're going, effectively you are encountering a headwind as you ride through that, you know, because you are impacting it at the speed that you're riding at.
Yeah, but slower riders then see a slightly wider range of wind angles, and so it, you know, there's, you know, you could argue that, yeah, you, maybe if you're a slower rider, you're going slower, you could optimize for, you know, kind of low, like higher yaw situations. And we see this with the design of triathlon bikes, for example, where they're kind of, you're using kind of chunkier, truncated aerofoil tubes that are designed to work over a kind of wider range of yaw angles compared to like a pure time trial bike, which would be optimized for going, you know, 50 kilometers per hour.
Sure. Yeah. But look, let's get down to brass tacks then. You know, what are the key findings that we have out of this wonderful test that we commissioned?
So we tested a total of 7 things, and I can list them for you now. Maybe we just kind of go through them like one by one, but we tested things like a road bike's speed suit or a kind of skin suit, you know, with kind of pockets. We also tested aero wheels. Now those, you know, not necessarily a good value upgrade, but we thought they made a kind of, those kind of bookended the top of what we might just, you know, if we're not going to be buying new bikes, that's the kind of upper end price point of what you might get.
And let's be fair as well, like that's what many people do when they want to improve their aero. They don't say look at anything else. It's right, I've got shallow wheels, or I've got say 35 mil deep carbon rims. I'm going to go up to 50 because that'll make me more aero, right?
That's exactly, yeah. It's a kind of you know, quintessential aero upgrade, isn't it? So it felt that even though they, you know, they were slightly on the more expensive end, it you know, perhaps, you know, maybe not represented good value, which we'll kind of come on to in a minute, it was still relevant to have them in. But we also tested aero socks, which I know Liam has some very interesting opinions on, which we'll come to later.
I love them.
We tested aero road helmets, and we also tested narrow handlebars. And then finally, we tested clip-on aero bars, which are kind of, you know, clip-on triathlon bars, or, you know, kind of time trial bars, you know, number of different names for them. And then obviously, lastly, we also kind of tested a kind of aerodynamic road bike riding position, or the kind of the aero hoods position, which is where you put your hands on the brake hoods and then you kind of crouch down low, get your kind of forearms horizontal. And it's like riding in the drops, but with horizontal forearms and hands on the brake hoods, basically.
And the benchmark for that position change before that was just sitting up with your arms straight on the hoods?
Yeah, as comfy as you would on the cafe ride.
Sure.
Nice, easy pace.
We did. The very first change that we made in the wind tunnel was going from that hands up on the hoods to then a kind of more traditional position where you had your hands on the brake hoods, but with kind of straight arms sat up. And it's from that base, that sort of secondary baseline, that we then made all the kind of changes towards like kit and things like that. But like, obviously, the way we worked out the numbers, we've given basically a kind of a wattage gain and a timed saved over 60 kilometers figure just for the each individual change. So when you go and view our lovely video, or you see the article on our website or in Cycling Plus in this month's issue, you will be able to see all of those lovely statistics.
And so at the end of it, we gave everything a pound per watt rating. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, because like I said, you know, the idea was to kind of find the best value products as well, because, you know, as we'll kind of come on to in a minute, like aero wheels were a good saving. They'd actually worked kind of, you know, slightly better than we thought, or certainly slightly better than I thought. But, you know, at the end of the day, they are still quite expensive. So, you know, in terms of pounds per watt, the kind of figure still comes out quite high compared to something like, you know, body position, which is, you know, changing your body position on the bike is free.
Free plus a little bit of guidance. A bit of a caveat on that.
No. Do it in your shed.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. We can all sort of work out, you know, a good optimizations to make, you know, on ourselves in our position, can't we? So, take us through some of those results then.
Okay, so the first one we tested was a kind of road bike speed suit. And specifically, we tested one from Le Col. Now, that saved Liam 3.69 watts at 35 kilometers per hour. And given it cost £395, that led to a cost per watt of £106.96. So 3.69 watts doesn't sound like much. you know, admittedly, it isn't really. But over 60 kilometers, that saves you 30 seconds. So perhaps, you know, if you were racing, you know, 30 seconds free is nice to have, right? I mean, but like, it wasn't the most comfortable thing to wear, was it?
No, it's we should also say it's possibly not the fastest skin suit you can get. It's certainly not the easiest one to get on for me and my body type. It has a very low cut neck, so all of my chest hair was on display, which you might be listening to that and it's doing stuff for you. But I mean, I wouldn't want to go out on the club run in it because it would look a bit silly. It's also got ridiculously long legs that like basically cover your knees. So yeah, not my favorite skin suit, I have to say, but 4 watts, essentially. And if we were testing at higher speeds, maybe it would have been more as well.
Yeah, I think this is kind of one of those things where this was made for the kind of Bahrain Victorious Pro Team. And I imagine that the fabrics that they're using are optimized for higher speeds.
I think they're going a bit faster than I can.
Yeah.
Plus, so their positions are naturally going to be a bit more sort of pro-esque as opposed to your position, which is good. But it's not okay. Pro.
Yeah, so yeah. So it's that kind of thing where, you know, like obviously we maybe we're making excuses here, but as Liam said, you know, you could get a cheaper speed suit, whether it's from kind of Castelli or Sportful or No Pins or another brand, for example. And you know, if you're spending less on it, then the kind of cost per watt figure comes down quite drastically, you know, assuming they offer a similar gains. But like as Liam says, it, you know, it wasn't that comfortable, and perhaps, you know, maybe it might look a little bit silly if you're not racing, you're just going on your club ride. It's kind of one of those things, right? For £400, you know, 30 seconds over 60 kilometers, if you're doing a 120 kilometer road race, that's a minute. And, you know, if you're racing, it's kind of a bit of a no-brainer, really, because, you know, it's a lot less money than buying a new bike.
Sure. What's next?
So the next one was in terms of, you know, cost per watt, was aero wheels. Now, we tested, as you said, Mavic. What is it?
Axiom.
I'm never going to get used to that.
No, don't like it.
I'll keep on.
We'll have to contact Mavic and get them to change the name.
Branding.
So we tested those wheels, which I have already forgotten, versus a set of Hunt 54 Aerodynamicist carbon disc wheel sets. Now, those saved a very healthy 10.17 watts at 35 kilometers per hour, which equates to a time saved over 60 kilometers of 1 minute and 36 seconds for a cost per watt of £93.44, given they cost £949.
We should say that they're relatively, I'm going to use the word affordable here. Please don't send me hate mail for saying affordable. They are at the mid-range of wheel sets.
So.
But also, these wheels are a model that have won in the World Tour as well, aren't
I think that's
they?
Right, yeah.
Under they've been used. Dimension Data.
That's right. I think they won a stage in the Giro last year.
So it just shows that you don't need to spend thousands. Just a thousand.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing. So I think, you know, because we tested at a range of your angles, from, you know, as far as I'm aware, kind of aero wheels tend to perform better at higher yaws. If you've seen wind tunnel charts from wheel tests, you know, they tend to be kind of quite closely grouped at 0 degrees yaw, and then the deeper rims tend to perform better at higher yaw. So now for slower riders, that's obviously quite good. As we discussed earlier, you tend to experience more high yaw situations. So aero wheels are, you know, they are an effective upgrade, but ultimately you still got to find almost £1,000 in your, you know, somewhere in your bank or your pocket to kind of get into them. So there is still a significant kind of barrier, but it was nice to know that they actually do work.
Yeah.
We were testing against pretty brick-like wheels, weren't we? The old Mavic Axiom isn't an optimized wheel set, but
yeah,
like we say, it's one wheel set that we see on a load of entry-level bikes, but sure, also we've all had them in the past, and they're dependable wheels, but what do you upgrade on your bike when you want it to look good? Oh, it's the wheels, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, well, so the next up in our little list of best value aero upgrades was the aero socks. Now, these cost £28, but surprisingly, they only saved 0.33 watts.
This was a surprising one for me because I've heard Josh Portner out of Silka, mm-hmm, kind of, you know, claimed that aero socks are going to save you 5 watts. So I was amazed that it didn't even save a watt But my ones that Simon lent me for the day, because I don't own any aero socks, they've seen a few races, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've seen the washing machine.
Not as many times as you would think. I mean, what Liam's alluding to is basically they started falling down during the test. And that's because they're not like a normal sock with a kind of stretchy knitted yarn. The kind of aero fabric that sits over your calf has then silicone grippers on the inside. But unfortunately, the stickiness of these silicone grippers tends to wear out after a few. I mean, those have probably seen, a dozen races, something like that. So we can leave it to the listeners to decide whether that's a lot or not very much, for example. Now, it is a tiny gain. There's no getting away from that. But it does equate to a kind of time saved over 60 kilometers of 6 seconds. So, for most people, that's not going to change your life, and that's absolutely fine. So I wouldn't bother wearing these for a club run. I mean, does that sound then? Yeah, we would all agree.
I think so. And they're not likely to be as comfortable, I would have thought, to wear over a long period.
Not if they fall down.
Well, not if they, no, but if you have sun cream and salt and sweat and all that stuff with silicon, I'm not so sure about that. I know you get that on bib shorts, but.
Yeah, so, and it comes at £28 for the kind of set, they come to a cost per watt of £84.90, which obviously, it doesn't really make sense because obviously Liam didn't even save a single watt, but you kind of get it, right? I think it's one of those things where, the wattage savings that you would see from, as you say, Silka or other brands who kind of make these things, is they're going to be higher at higher speeds because of the laws of physics, as we've already discussed. If you're racing, you're doing time trials and you are riding at higher speeds, or, you're doing road racing and you're winning sprints, or, you're whatever, right? You're racing and those 6 seconds are important to you. Then this is, for £28 to save 6 seconds, plenty of races have been won or lost by way less than 6 seconds. And so, if that's what it means to you, then again, bit of a no-brainer. But if you're not racing, I just don't think these are not where it's at.
No, that's fair enough. Next one.
So the next one was aero road helmets. Now, we tested this versus a kind of standard road helmet, and we actually kept the brand the same. So we kind of tested the Laser Vento Kineticore, which is the aero road helmet, and we tested that against the Laser Genesis, which is a kind of very similar shape, but very heavily vented. And actually, this one was a really good saving. This one saved 7.56 watts at 35 kilometers per hour, which equated to a minute and a half over 60 kilometers. And at £250, that was a cost per watt of £33.06, which is a significant step up.
Mm. Any issues with this helmet, though?
Well, what do you think? What do you think, Liam? I remember you telling me that you could feel the difference in the kind of the way the wind pulled over your head when you were wearing these two.
Yeah, so at 0.5 degree of your, you can feel the air pulling over your head really, really well. Mm-hmm. That feeling that we've all had with aero helmets of quite targeted airflow over the scalp, and then the yaw changed to 10 degrees and that cut off. So this one wasn't maybe the best to use in a crosswind, if it was an extreme crosswind and you were trying to stay cool, which I'm pretty sure only applies to riders that are doing the Dubai tour or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Round here, when it's a crosswind, you're also not looking to stay cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of a trickier one. I think, for me, I was surprised how much difference this makes. This is sort of 3/4 of the way to the saving you get from, we found from an aero wheel set, but at a quarter of the price. Yeah. And I thought that, I knew that aero helmets were, a good thing to have, but I was surprised at the kind of magnitude of the difference, considering that they only kind of change, what's on your head. But I guess, as Liam's already alluded to, when you're sat up with your head in the wind, it's something that can be optimized more. So obviously the kind of caveat with aero road helmets, as already mentioned, is that, you're nearly always sacrificing some cooling in favor of, increased aerodynamics, because they essentially close off the vents and have a smoother surface. Now, different brands of helmets will have different approaches to this. But, if you're doing lots of, in my experience, aero road helmets tend to work best when you're going fast. And as Liam says, there's that kind of targeted airflow. And if you're riding fast, a lot of air gets pushed through those vents at high speeds, and that can offer very effective cooling. But then on the flip side, if you're not riding at high speed, that lack of kind of ventilation means heat can't really escape from your head so much. And so for like kind of hot days when you're kind of climbing or riding at slower speeds, aero road helmets can feel a little bit stuffy in my experience. So it's just kind of like, it's a really good saving, but if your head ends up being really uncomfortable and really hot on a really hot day, they're like, I just don't know if that's worth it. But you know, if you say, Liam, in this country where the weather's always rubbish, you know, maybe that's an advantage. So an aero road helmet was a really effective gain, but just kind of be careful when and where you're using them. So the next one we tested in terms of cost per watt was narrow handlebars. Now, the ones that we tested, Liam, went from 40 centimetre handlebars down to 36 centimetre handlebars, and it saved 2.43 watts or 18 seconds over 60 kilometres. Now, the reason this was such good value at £8.65 per watt was because I happened to have a set of Rose Attack GF handlebars, which cost just £21. So it's a really nice handlebar. It's got a kind of like 36 centimetre hood position, a kind of a little bit of flare. It's very, very cheap. But of course, if your bike has a more integrated front end, you won't be able to just stick a kind of aluminium round handlebar on it.
If you've got a modern road bike, this is going to cause you so many headaches, especially if the bike brand that you've bought from just decided that 40 centimetres was the narrowest.
Or 42, yeah, 42. Yeah, so that's kind of the problem here, is that like, if you've got a non-integrated bike, this is a very easy one to switch to, you know. But if you have a bike with, you know, a 42 centimeter integrated handlebar, this could cost you £500 to switch to. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at a cost per watt, which is way higher. You know, 18 seconds over 60 kilometers, you know, that's three times what you saved with aero socks, for example. Not a huge gain, of course, but sorry, you're looking at me with a funny grin, Liam.
Yeah, because I can say that my Athos is faster than most modern road aero bikes.
Well, that's his opportunity to say that, moving on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, you know, and then of course, yeah, we also have the kind of like the bike fit implications and possibly also handling implications to contest with as well. Now, am I saying that everyone should just go out and, you know, whack a 36 centimeter bar on their handle on their bike, you know, regardless of shape, size, person, application? Like, no. I think Liam swapping from his kind of baseline 40 centimeter handlebar to a 36 centimeter handlebar on what is a pure road bike, you know, just going two sizes down makes a lot of sense. But if you're a really big person and you're kind of riding, you know, a 44 centimeter handlebar, jumping to a 36 centimeter handlebar is more like four sizes. Mm-hmm. And that potentially, you know, if you're quite broad, might not be the most comfortable thing for you. You know, you might find it too narrow to handle comfortably. So there are bike fit implications, and it is worth considering that if you're going to consider this change.
I would agree with that. Especially, you know, it's not just, you know, the width of your, say, shoulders in relation to where your hands are as well. It's the compression that it puts on your wrists, the positions of your hoods. All these things can have an impact on the angles that you then have to sort of take the brace against the road with. It's definitely, we're not saying make this change. We're simply saying that it's a valid change you can make should your bike fit allow you to do so.
Yeah, and you know, likewise, if you're racing something, you know, like road bike time trials, or even, you know, you're considering racing on the track, for example, you know, you could go even narrower. Like a lot of the kind of elite track riders these days are riding with handlebars kind of, you know, around 25 centimeters to 30 centimeters wide. Now, I'm not saying that anyone should do that on their road bike, but I have actually tested it. Like for me, as a kind of relatively narrow person, it was okay. But there were a lot of obvious compromises. But if you're just racing, you know, very short events on the track, you know, the gains from that could be even bigger, and you might be able to go, you know, even faster for, again, for very little money. So it's because it affects the way your body hits the wind, it's kind of a good aero upgrade. But yeah, like, as we've kind of said, this one does come with a few caveats.
I would also say that if you have a non-integrated front end on your road bike, a 20 quid gamble ain't that much to kind of throw at the bike. So you can kind of test it, and maybe you could buy a 38 centimeter at the same time and just fit them, don't wrap the bars yet, go out for a couple of rides and see how you get on, and then just make your own choice.
Great. What's next?
So our number two product in our list was...
We're already down to number two.
We are, yeah. So we're getting towards the really meaty stuff here was clip-on aero bars, and those saved 31 watts at 35 kilometers per hour for 6 minutes and 21 seconds over 60 kilometers. Now, I think I gave you a different price because I paid, in the video, I said it was £80 because that's what I originally paid for. But when I did the article, I looked them up and they've actually gone up in price.
Oh, no.
So there's a little bit of a continuity error. But on my on the article online, which is the kind of official price now, they cost £117. But that still works out to a cost per watt of £3.73, which is fantastic value when you think about it. Like, you know, that's way better than an aero road helmet, for example. And yeah, to save six minutes and 21 seconds over 60 kilometers per hour, we were no longer in marginal gains territory.
No,
it's significant. And obviously, we're not saying that you should go and fit these on before your first Cat 4 road race, because you will be disqualified. They're obviously illegal in certain events. But if you are doing some, even some touring, and you know, that gives you another position to be in on long miles, go for it. It doesn't matter how your bike looks. It doesn't matter what other people think. If it's comfortable for you and it's faster and you want to use it occasionally, go for it. Why not?
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree with that. But there's also a safety element as well. If you're in a group ride situation and you want to get faster for your group ride, having and using aero bars is can either be by the club, you know, frowned upon, told you shouldn't be using them, but it can be unsafe as well because you're not in total control of your bike when you're resting on.
Please don't.
Yeah, 100%. So,
we really do need to fly.
Yeah, no aero bars in group rides or races, please. But like, I think most people will kind of know this is probably a really obvious one, is that most people will know that clip-on aero bars make your body very aerodynamic because they bring your elbows in, they allow you to kind of like relax your head and your shoulders and get those down, and you can kind of have a flatter back. You know, it's like having a kind of, you know, riding around in the drops at all time, but you're not having to support your own weight for your muscles, so it's much more sustainable. I think, yeah, as Liam said, if you're touring or maybe you're riding gravel or you're doing Audaxes or, you know, something like that, like any kind of event where it's sort of these are allowed and it's safe to do so, these are a real no-brainer. And you know, like I don't really ride much gravel, but I have followed all the kind of spirit of gravel arguments around, you know, should aero bars be allowed, should they be banned? And like, I can tell you, if they were allowed in the event that I was doing, I would 100% have a set of these, because they are, you will not find basically a better, more sustainable aero upgrade for your money.
Especially when you're doing 200 miles off-road.
No, exactly. Well, no matter the distance, right? Like even if it was 10 miles, like I would always choose to have aero bars than not if it was about going fast.
The only way that you're going to like gravel is if they do 10-mile gravel time trials, isn't it?
I'd love it. Yeah, I can have disc wheels with gravel tires on them.
I think when you go through the pearly gates one day, you'll walk through and you'll be just faced with like thousands of like people on time trial bikes or like on bar extensions.
I think I'm going to hell.
You might well be.
For ruining Liam's Aphos in a wind tunnel.
Yeah, that is a cardinal sin. So what's the winner then? What's the most valuable or the best bang for buck upgrades you can make?
So it's body position.
Whoa.
Shocking.
Yeah. Okay, so as we said earlier, the specific body position we're talking about was the kind of aero hood position, and that saved Liam 22.38 watts, which is just slightly less than the 31 watts were saved with the aero bars, but it equates to a time saving of 4 minutes and 24 seconds over 60 kilometers. But of course, for a cost per watt basis, it was absolutely free, so it cost Liam nothing to do that.
So we should say that we're changing from on the hoods, kind of arms in a slightly bent but comfortable, relaxed position to fully
around at the countryside sort of position.
To full on race mode.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that therein lies the issue with this. And because I alluded to earlier, you know, clip on aero bars support your weight. When you're doing this, you have to brace your weight with your upper arm muscles. And as, you know, most people will know, that's quite difficult, isn't it, Liam?
You know, funnily enough, it is.
Shoulders and neck as well?
No, shoulders and neck were fine. I'm relatively used to the position. My issue came because we were testing. They didn't need me to ride at a given wattage. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, well, test at like 180 watts or something, or 130. Mm. Nothing for me. If I'm adopting that position, I need to be in kind of pace line through and off group ride mode.
Putting out more power.
Riding at your kind of FTP.
Trying to go around Castle Coombe as fast as possible with the elites kind of thing. Mm. And yeah, if I don't have that kind of core support supporting my arms, my triceps were just burning in hell. And these were 30-second runs.
Yeah,
at a time.
Yeah, and I think so. Obviously, as Liam says, like when if you're kind of in a race scenario in the real world and you're trying to go as hard as you can, when you're pushing on the pedals, you're you know that effort is supporting some of your body weight, and therefore you're not having to brace it all through your kind of triceps. But nevertheless, you know, I occasionally ride in this position when I've gone out on group rides with my friends and in races in the past. It is still a hard position compared to using a set of clip-on aero bars. So, you know, this isn't going to be something we were going to probably be recommending to Audax riders or, you know, those out for a kind of like touring cycle because, yeah, like it will make you more aerodynamic, but it is also going to cost you a lot in terms of energy. So it's just kind of one of the things. Now, of course, you know, as with anything, you can train your body and, you know, as Liam's already alluded to, he's been in the gym honing himself, chiseling away at the fine specimen of a man that he is. I don't know if it's to improve your aero position or if that's just tangential to the...
You know, funnily enough, it's not. No. To be a better human. I've had too long of being a cyclist and I'd like to be functional.
Yeah, but if you know if you're a racer and you're thinking about this, you know this is a very significant aero upgrade. It costs you nothing, but I think if you're going to make the most of it, you're going to have to go out there and spend significant time during training riding in order to kind of hold this position. It doesn't kind of it's not free in terms of, you know, that sense. It's just free in terms of money spent.
It's that effort to what it saves you kind of ratio, like the skin suit, the wheels, the helmet, the socks, all purchasable in an evening when you've had one too many glasses of wine. And the aero position needs, and I'm not talking like a week of work or a month of work, it is 6 months to a year of working at it specifically. And the reason that the pros can do it is because they ride 25, 30 hours a week. And within that time, they will do specific intervals in these positions so that they can go and do it in the races. And if you're sitting at home thinking, oh yeah, I would like to be able to do that, doesn't need to be a crazy 5-hour session where you stay in this position all the time. But, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I want to, you know, target that Strava comp or I want to do half an hour at zone 3, do it in that position. It will just reap so many rewards.
I think this is an incredibly good gain. And yeah, certainly if you're going for a Strava KOM or, you know, you don't want to get dropped by your friends, you know, like this is the big thing that you can do is get your body into a more aerodynamic position and it costs you absolutely nothing. And, you know, obviously we haven't tested bikes in this test, but I would be very surprised if you saw a 22.38 watt gain from upgrading to a new bike, right? Yeah, it's possible to get that kind of gain literally without spending a penny just by adapting your body position. You don't have to do it all the time, but the more you can do it, the faster you're going to go.
And the thing about body positions, you know, when you're riding around on a given ride is you can change them as well and it's adaptable. So if you are riding into a headwind, you might be more inclined to adopt that because you'll save more watts because you'll be into that headwind. There'll be more wind that you're having to push out of the way. So by optimizing yourself in that way, it'll be a little bit better for you. Whereas if you're in a tailwind, you still can do this and it still will make you faster. But if you've got a howling tailwind, as I did for parts of my ride yesterday, I still got into a more aero position because I thought, well, I want to make the most of this.
Because you're going faster. So then aero makes more of a difference.
I'm doing 50 kilometers an hour and that's not very normal for me. So, you know, it swings around abouts with that. But there are ways to employ it in small doses. We're not saying go out there and ride in that position 100% all the time. Because,
well, I don't think you'll be able to.
Well, you see your chiropractor.
Very, very strong arms if you're going to do that.
But if anyone wants to read the full reviews and our full sort of deep dive into this test, you can see it on bikeradar.com from today, I believe. You can read about it in Cycling Plus magazine, which is in all good
Issue 404 on sale from March the 16th.
You didn't memorize that, did you?
No. Only the ones where my coffee is going in it.
Yeah, of course. And it's also on the YouTube channel, isn't it, Liam?
Yeah, it's much better if you go and watch it and completely disregard all written content.
Although Liam has said that if you buy a copy of the magazine, he will be signing the covers since he is on the cover of this issue.
You've been here 30 minutes and you're on the cover of Cycling Plus already.
If you'd like a signed picture of Liam, you can email us at podcast@bikeradar.com. And Leah will send you an autograph.
I'm not guaranteeing it's going to be a nice photo that you get back.
Well, let's see if that does get anyone to email in. But also, if you have any questions about today's podcast, please email us at podcast@bikeradar.com. And if you have enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating, because that helps us reach other cyclists like you. But, tells us that we're doing a reasonable job. At the same time, if you think we could do better, please give us a 1-4-star rating if you feel that that's necessary as well.
No, I just wouldn't leave it.
People.
No, I wouldn't leave it. If you don't think we're doing well, send us an email on how we can improve, but don't leave us a rating.
Please.
Let us try it.
We would really like to make amends. Yeah. So exactly. give us a chance. We're nice.
Thank you for joining me, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.